Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Brad, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Brad.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing the first part of step four, the resentment section of step four. And I'd like you up to... Please welcome our panel. We have Dave and Amy. And I will read the first paragraph on page 63. And before I do that, I think I will read the step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. First paragraph, page 63. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal housecleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions.
Okay. My name is Amy, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Amy.
And a lot of people talk about step four like it's a horrible thing, and nobody wants to go into it. But I have to say that this is the place where I start being able to take some action that gives me some hope for the rest of my life. Things like one day at a time, let go and let God, live and let live. This is where that stuff becomes real for me. This enables me to live one day at a time because I'm going to go back and I'm going to clean up the wreckage of the past. I'm going to take responsibility for my part. And taking responsibility for my part means I'm going to stop being dominated by the world and the people in it. I'm going to see that my problems are of my own making. And that's how I'm going to let go and let God. I'm going to quit playing God. I'm going to stop assigning myself a role. I'm going to stop assigning you roles. And that's also how I'm going to live and let live, because I'm going to see that when I make this be all about me, I see that no one has to change in order for me to be okay. I used to think that if I got all my ducks in a row, if I just had a better man, if my mom was nicer, if I had more money in the bank, better job, whatever, 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 everything would be okay. Except that never happened because I'm an alcoholic. And to treat my alcoholism, the fact that I was never happy where I was never satisfied with what I had. I always wanted to be somewhere different. I just was Action Jackson. I mean, I had to be moving all the time, like a shark. I would have died if I had to sit still and actually think about me. I had to tell somebody today that I almost made a phone call today because I was having computer problems, and I did not want... I just felt upset, and I was powerless, and I don't like not being in charge. And I had to stop myself from making a phone call to get on a phone with somebody who has got some issues right now so that I could get into that person's stuff and kind of judge them and criticize them, of course, under the guise of being helpful. But it would have been a good way for me to avoid how it felt to be me in the moment. This step four brings me out of that. I mean, I've come out from behind the bottle now. I'm not being asked to tell the story, because the story is always the same. It's the Amy story, starring Amy, directed by Amy. You're supporting players, but nobody gives a heck about you. I certainly don't. You're just there to make me look good. You're just there to play the role that I've assigned you. And I've just come out of step three where I'm going to take this position now where I'm the actor and God's the director. I'm the child. I haven't been able to get my own needs met as a child. I need to be parented. And the way that I'm going to do that is I'm going to vigorously, so quickly, immediately, seriously launch. I'm going to get on it, and I'm going to stay on it because I'm hanging over the pit by a thread. I know what's behind me. I don't want to go back there. And for me, I had to really become willing to become a stranger to myself, because everything that I thought I knew about myself was mainly lies and delusions and grandiosity. And it hadn't really worked out for me anyway. So I had to become willing to become a stranger to myself. And I had to become willing just to be honest, even just a little bit. I was telling someone earlier today that, I mean, I even hid my drinking and my drugging from myself. It wasn't that I was hiding bottles and stuff around the house so nobody else would find out about it. It was because I did not want to see the big bulk number, whatever, that I was consuming on a daily basis. And so now in step four, I'm going to tell the truth to myself about myself for the first time. And although that's not great because it's not really good news, it's going to free up a lot of energy, all the energy that I have formerly put to use staying in the lies, staying in the delusions that my life works out. Things would be okay if only my man, you know, screwed me more often. If only my boss paid me for standing around being smart. If only, if only, if only. Because, of course, it's everybody else's fault. Now I'm going to take a look at me. And I love this sentence. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, step three, very important to turn my will and my life over. And the way I look at that is my will or my thoughts, my life or my actions. So I'm going to turn it all over. But how am I going to do that? I hear people in meetings say all the time, oh, I turned my will over, but I took it back. I took it back, blah, 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 blah. Well, no, here's how I'm going to turn my will over. I'm going to become willing to submit myself to the rest of this process. I'm not going to, like at every other phase of my life, try to circumvent or cheat the process, because that's what I always do. I'll quickly blow through the directions and then say, that doesn't apply to me, that doesn't apply to me. I'm going to put these two together. It's going to be much shorter. It's better because I'm smarter than everybody else. That's how I'm going to proceed. I'm not going to do that here. I'm going to do exactly what it tells me to do, because there's going to be no effect. It says half measures avail me nothing. Not half measures will get me half effects. Half measures will get me nothing. And I don't want to get drunk again, because then all bets are off. Forget all this higher states of thought of being happy, joyous, and free. It's, you know, staying out of jail and keeping my butt from being on fire. That's it. Thanks.
Thanks, Amy. I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Dave.
And I keyed on that. The decision was a vital and crucial step in the launched out as well. So I really need to talk about that decision because that's what launched me. And I had been sober about 6 months. I'd done steps 1 and 2 with a sponsor in another town. I'd moved to Virginia Beach. And I'd done a few things, and I called my old sponsor to tell him what a great guy I was. And he told me, don't call me again until you get a sponsor in Virginia Beach. And so I got one in Virginia Beach, and he kind of said, well, when are you going to do your 4-step? When are you going to do your 4-step? And like Amy said, I was scared of it for whatever reason. You know, fear was my motivating factor in everything, so why not be scared of looking at my fears, you know? So, I was feeling physically well. I was living in an Oxford house, I think I said, doing okay. But for about a week, it started, all the things I had done, all that stuff that was going to end up on my 4-step started swimming around in my head. And I couldn't stop it. And it says here, our liquor is but a symptom. And that convinced me that the problem was in my head. And I talked about it. I'd gone to a meeting that day. And I left the meeting, and I could taste it. And I knew that that would give me temporary relief if I took a drink. And I came to a T intersection, and my favorite bar was a mile one way, and the Oxford House was a mile another way. And I said, God, please get me home tonight. And that was me abandoning myself to God because I didn't have anywhere else to go. And I got home. And the next morning, it wasn't really a decision anymore. I'd made the decision the night before, I think, because I just knew what to do. And I went to the library and I started writing. And I launched out on it. And, it took, I think, 2 or 3 days at the library, 10 or 15 hours. And I got it all out. And like Amy said, I had to admit most of that stuff to myself, honestly. I knew what the resentments were. I didn't know what the underlying causes were. And I had to be honest with myself that I was the one that had set the ball rolling in all these cases. And we'll get to that. But anyway, thanks.
We'll continue on page 64. Therefore, we started upon a personal limit work. This is step 4. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. Being convinced that self, manifested in various ways, was what had defeated us. We considered its common manifestations.
I like that they start the description of step 4 with this inventory thing because it takes some of the sting out of it. If I can visualize that, really, I'm just kind of going into the pantry and I'm going to ditch the stuff that's expired, ditch the stuff that I'm never going to use. And that's the attitude that I need to take into this, that, you know, this doesn't really have any value for me. These resentments, these attitudes, this spiritual sickness is not working for me. Although I specialize in trying to force things into working that aren't working, the fact is it really is not working for me. And so I am willing to get rid of it. Why hang on to it any longer? And I like that it says taking commercial inventory is a fact finding. So fact finding, it's a searching and a fact facing, fearless process. And this is not something that I'm excited about doing. I mean, just like every other part of this program for me, I need to have a power greater than my own. Lack of power is my dilemma. I do not have the will to tell the bad news about myself, to out my addict. I don't have the will to do that. It's ugly. And I'm all about making it look good, especially making me look good. So this is an act against my own will. I always like to go back to page 55 when I'm at this part. And this paragraph says that We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup, just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, so it's already foreshadowing what's coming. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there. He was as much a fact as we were. We found the great reality, capital G, capital R. So that's, you know, big book code for God. We found the great reality deep down in, within us. In the last analysis, it is only there that he may be found. And so I take this as a promise that if I will go about this excavation, if I will become willing to do this, I will find the great reality deep down in there. What I've been afraid of for so long is that if I go digging around in there, I'm going to find some stuff that is so bad that I'm going to have to kill myself. I'm going to find out that I'm not as smart as I think I am. I'm not as funny as I know I'm not that funny. But all this other stuff, I'm going to find out, you know, all the lies that I had to tell myself to prop my ego up just so I could walk around amongst you all. I'm going to find out that this stuff isn't true and it's going to kill me. That hasn't been the case. The case has been that I found grace and more grace and love and more love and forgiveness all over the place. I've never had the experience of looking somebody in the eye in this process and telling them what I thought was the absolute worst of the stock that I had on the shelves and have them go, Amy, you belong in an institution. I can't be friends with you. You scare me. I'm locking up my kids, my husband, my food, and my money. Just please leave me alone. It's never happened. And that's because I have all the power in the universe on my side. I can't always tell you for sure what I believe God's will is, but I'm 100% sure about what God's will is not. God's will is not for me to walk around loaded on a substance, or even not loaded on a substance, but loaded in my mind with that distorted thinking. You know, not only do I want peace of mind, I want peace from mind. And getting it down in black and white stops the voices in my head. Because it's not really the facts that are the problem. It's my stories about the facts that are the problem. And it talks here about how self manifested in various ways was what had defeated us. So I take a look at how I have given my self-esteem, my ambition, my pride, my security. I've given all that stuff away to you people, which, I mean, talk about building your house on sand. That means that my whole life is going about the business of making you love me and adore me so that I then can feel good about myself. Because I really don't care about how you feel, just how you feel in relation to me. I mean, what a convoluted mess. I don't know how I walked a straight line. But this process promises me that I can get some clarity, that I can face this, that I can be rid of this, and that these manifestations of self, giving away these areas of self to other people, all this stuff can come back to where it's appropriate, to where I'm building my foundation on bedrock, which is on the God of my understanding. But I have to work these steps to clear away the stuff that blocks me from God. And resentment is something that blocks me from God. Why? Because I'm mad at you because you're not what I want you to be. I'm playing God. How can I have access to God when I am God? So this is the way out. Thanks.
Nice. I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic. When I read this and I saw it relating it to business, I said, uh-oh. I'm not very good at business. I used to sell certain commodities, I guess you'd call them, and there was very little inventory because the guy running the business tended to take care of all that. And but anyway, so you know, and yeah, I'd never looked at myself. Why would I want to do that? Yeah, I knew it'd be ugly, and I remember when I was growing up, you know, in high school, and they're talking about kids coming of age and all of that angst. Well, I drank right through all of that, you know, so I never went through it. And of course, I'm still like 13 when I'm 42 and I get here. But, you know, at this point, like Amy was talking about, I had made that decision. A couple of other times I had prayed in times that I was really worried about drinking during my early sobriety, and peace had come over me. And so at this point, and I wasn't too worried about telling anybody else. I was just worried about getting it out of my head. And I just was writing, and it really gave me a great deal of relief to just get it out of my head. Thanks.
All right, we'll continue on page 64. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we have not only been mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When a spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We list people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations which had been interfered with?
So how this looks for me is column one, people, institutions, principles. Column two, why we were angry. And then column three, taking a look at these areas of self. So I have a resentment. I always have resentment against my mother because she hasn't treated me the way that I think I deserve to be treated. How this affects my self-esteem, the voice of my ego is saying, I'm the best daughter she could ever have. I'm the most spiritually fit person she knows. I am the best example of a godlike life that she will ever know. But the self-centered fear underneath that voice is, I'm afraid I'm not a very good daughter. I'm afraid I'm really not even a great family member. I'm afraid that I'm not much of a spiritual example. I'm afraid that I haven't respected her every bit as much as I feel she hasn't respected me. So that's the role that I'm playing. That voice of my ego is the role that I've assigned myself, world's greatest daughter. And then the role that I've assigned you, the role that I've assigned her, my pride. She should see how wonderful I am. She should see how hard I've worked in my recovery. She should see how of service I am to other people. She should see how I am more godly than any of her quackadoodle Christian friends up at the church on the hill. But what's really under that is I'm afraid that I haven't done right ever. I'm afraid that I'm unworthy of being treated any better than she has treated me. My ambition, what I want to happen here, based on the sick emotions that I've been drinking all these years so that I don't have to feel them. What I want to happen here is I want her to treat me the way I want to be treated. My security. I need to be treated like a wonderful daughter in order to be okay. Now, I don't think I'm worthy of any of those things, but my spiritual sickness manifested in this self-centeredness, this selfishness, my self-seeking motives. Because in this whole thing, what's really going on is I don't really give a darn about how my mom feels. I'm only interested in the relationship as far as how it makes me feel. Then I take a look at my false system of belief. What is it that I believe about personal relationships? I believe that mothers and daughters are supposed to have a close relationship. And I'm so broken that hasn't worked out for me. But I'm absolutely sure that in every other home in America, mothers and daughters adore each other and go buy makeup together and blah, 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 blah. Another personal relationship. Families are like Norman Rockwell paintings. Now, who knows if I've ever even seen that except in a Norman Rockwell painting. But I've been beating myself up all these years thinking that every one of you is going home to this beautiful, wonderful, convivial scene, and because I'm such a screw-up, I'm not worthy of having that in my own life. I take a look at sex relationships, gender stuff. You know, a real woman adores her daughter. a real woman wants her daughter to be her best friend. Well, that has not been my experience. But again, my self-centered fear is that hasn't been my experience because I'm not worthy of it. So I go through these first three columns, and what I find out is that although I've been showing the world that I'm pissed, I'm angry, I'm sore, what's really going on is my self-centered fear that I'm not worthy of being treated any better. And the work of these steps, all of these steps, and particularly this one, is so that I can clear up what blocks me from God and I can step into the grace that was there for me all along. I'm the weak link in the equation. And this spiritual sickness has come up because I have been living agnostically. I have been living self-reliant. That deep down attitude that if it is to be, it is up to me. You know, more false system of belief. If I'm good, if I'm strong, then this will happen. If I'm skinny enough, the richest, most wonderful man in the world will marry me and my life will be easy. I mean, I read too many books. I didn't watch too much TV. I read too many books which formulated all these attitudes, and it never occurred to me that I was basing my life and my motives on stuff that was fictional. But I manufacture misery. That's what my alcoholic mind is. So I have behaved as if all this stuff is real, as if I know these things to be true. This forces me to take a look at, it's not what I know, it's what I think I know. And it's that thinking that has been the problem all along.
Can I say something?
No, it's not open discussion.
Okay, I'm going. Mm-hmm.
I'm Dave, I'm an alcoholic.
I'm gonna tell you the truth. Okay, when Asia does it and everybody go back, guess what? I've been going to these meetings for 10 years. It seems like y'all sit up here and put yourself down. Tell y'all something good about them.
And you can put on Adderall. What? Or some medication. You're just speaking to me.
All right, thank y'all.
Can someone talk to him? Take
him. All right. So when I remember the first time I read this sentence here, I was probably a month or two sober. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. And I didn't understand that because I was feeling better physically, and I thought I was better mentally. Y'all know different, and I know different now. And I had no spirituality. But my sponsor told me that this didn't mean physically inside of me. It meant my physical relationships with the world. Like Amy was talking about those relationships. And that made more sense because, yeah, I wasn't very good at those. And he also told me that, and this was the case for me, that resentment is refeeling. And a lot of times for me, it wasn't anger. It was resentment or it was shame and guilt and remorse. He said, if you think of somebody, or you're walking down the street and you see them, if you either want to beat them up or run, you got a resentment. Yeah. And most of the time, I wanted to run because I got my butt kicked a lot. But anyway, so really for me, it was self-esteem. All these other things, my pocketbooks, my ambitions, my personal relationships, as Amy said, I mean, it was really about what you thought of me. I wanted all that stuff just so you would think better of me because I didn't think much of myself. I needed you to think good of me, you know, in order to validate me. And so, I had that, the old egomaniac with the inferiority complex thing going. And what this process did for me was to, even that out, to bring it down to where I was right-sized. And again, it was all fear-based. It's all about either losing something I have or not getting something I want, and not material things, but your respect and your adulation and your love, and those kind of things. And again, I found I have to get that through working these steps and getting this relationship with this higher power that, and doing the right thing, I had to act myself into thinking better. I had to take things and do things that, were contrary to my nature at the time. But when I do that, I also looked at all this damage I had done, right? But I found in doing this process, well, if I just don't do those things anymore, different stuff will happen. Maybe I can have a positive influence on somebody, and that's been my experience. I see it happen all the time with people in here. That they come in, they go through the steps, and they start becoming beacons of hope, and they become good family members and good AA members, and really, go into the fourth dimension, as we say. Thanks.
Continue on page 65. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived.
I have definitely experienced all of this stuff. If I don't get my way, I throw more self-will at it. I get louder, or I become ever more gracious or demanding, as the case may be. I'll switch strategies on you just to throw you off a little bit. Whatever it is that I have to do to, one, get my way, and two, avoid feeling what it feels like to be me on the inside and feel okay just for a little while. And I'll use you, I'll use relationships to do that just as much as I ever used any substance. What's coming to me right now is that acronym for SHAME, which is should have already mastered everything. I was really driven by shame. I mean, that's where my agnosticism comes from. That's my self-reliance. I think that I should just be able to do everything. And I also think I should be able to look great while I'm doing it. And of course, that's not really life. Life is not a before and an after picture. There's this big, long, honking, unattractive period in the middle. And that's where I got to live. And I don't know how to do that. I'm a jackrabbit on steroids. I'm lickety split, get it done, move on to the next episode. And what this is demanding that I do is I sit still for a little while and I consider these first three columns. Consider that the people, the world and the people in it have dominated me. Consider that my feelings have been so important to me that I've done absolutely anything I could to avoid feeling them. It is such a big deal to me. I'm so dominated by my emotional nature that I'm driven, that I have these horrible self-seeking motives. I have to impose my will on you so that I can feel a different way, so that I can create a different outcome. Even though deep down in my gut, I know. I don't believe my own hype. I know. I mean, I'm making a good show of it. I am the actor on the stage. And I know all of my roles really well. I know how to be Ms. Spirituality and talk in a really soft voice and be modulated and mellow. Like, I could even wear scarves. That would make me more spiritual looking, too. I've got it all fleshed out. I was telling somebody earlier, the first time that I did a really thorough four-step out of the big book, I guess the purging of my insides led me to want to purge my outsides, and I went in my closet and I could see the schizophrenia. I could see the multiple personalities. I could see, the drunken slut femme fatale. I mean, I see out of one eye. What am I doing with 5-inch heels and leather pants? I have asthma and I'm chronic, I'm nearsighted. What am I doing with all this athletic stuff? I've barely ever held down a job in my life. What am I doing with all these suits? But I've played all these roles because in the absence of knowing who I am, I've lived out who I am not. I've defaulted into these scripts because if who I'm being is a drunken slut, it tells me what to say, who to hang out with, where to hang out, what to wear, blah, blah, blah. And now I'm getting an opportunity to see that that's what forcing my will got me. It got me nothing but a lifetime of play acting. Lies based on lies based on lies. How could I have ever hoped that any of my relationships were going to work out? I mean, if I went to bed as femme fatale next to Mr. AA, how was that going to work out for the evening? And if I woke up in the morning feeling a little insecure and needing to be Ms. Spirituality, and he was Randy Andy, ready to step into that role, what was going to occur between us? It wasn't going to work. It was never going to work. But instead of taking a look at this, these strategies are not working out for me, I did what any good alcoholic does. I tried harder and I tried more. And this is telling me that the usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Forcing my will, imposing my will, playing God and telling you who you should be and how you should be never worked out for me. And frankly, as a long-term strategy, if I'm looking around judging you and the circumstances around you, how is it possible that I'm going to be able to live with the belief that all is in divine order and God is in charge? Because I'm looking at his handiwork saying, he doesn't know what he's doing. He really screwed up over there. How am I going to be able to live in faith and trust? Thanks.
Dave, I'm not caught. You know, as I wrote these down, my resentments, you know, there were, don't get me wrong, there were quite a few where people had wronged me, but I'd had a part in it, obviously, and we'll get to that. But somewhere in the literature it says, the wrongs done us, real or fancied. And I bet two-thirds of mine were like, when I put them on paper, I said, oh, my God, there's nothing there. Nothing really happened, you know. I'm nursing this grudge so that I can keep drinking. That's really what it was all about, because I have to talk to myself into continuing to drink. I got to rationalize it and make it seem like a good idea, you know. And because woe is me, look at all that's happened to me. Really not that much happened to me. And the number one guy on my resentment list was God, you know. He was at the top. I was number two. Ego, and he was number one, you know, ego. But I had a real beef. But when I, you know, when I look at my life now, and even at that point, I could see that something was always there reaching out. I just never reached back. I'd had plenty of opportunities to right the ship, if you will, or whatever. I'd even had a few, you know, introductions to you guys along the way. But you know, I was basically waiting for money to fall out of the sky, you know, and until that happened, God wasn't treating me right, yeah. And so, but, you know, really, it was mostly in my head. It really was. And it took putting it on paper, the thing that I feared the most, to see that. But once that happened, the relief was incredible. You know, a lot of weight was lifted before I even got to five, just in that process, you know. And again, there were some that took quite a while. In fact, you know, I just made my last payment on a 9-step amends about a month ago. But we're on 4, so we'll just stay there. Thanks.
All right. Page 66. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the Spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again, and with us, to drink is to die. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison.
I have to remember when I'm reading this, especially stuff like, if I were to live, I had to be free of anger, that I'm not working these steps to get the power to do any of this stuff. I mean, I can't wish my resentments away. I've had some religious periods where I thought to myself, God doesn't want me to be pissy. God doesn't want me to hold resentments. blah, blah, blah. But I can't talk myself out of resentments. These actions that I'm taking here by doing this written work is my part of the deal. I'm not going to get the power. I'm going to get to the power. Just like I got separated from alcohol, I'm going to get separated from resentment. And I also, I love the grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. I mean, of course, I think of brainstorming, sitting around coming up with ideas. But the dictionary of this year defines brainstorm as violent derangement of the mind. And me in a bad mood is definitely a violent derangement of the mind. And it does feel very cold and dark and out of the sunlight of the spirit when I am dwelling in that place, when I'm dwelling in the problem instead of in the solution. Life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness to the precise extent that we permit these. Do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? I can blow through a day in a blackout just from my thinking. It does not have to have anything to do with a substance. I can be so occupied up here in the control tower that I am disembodied. Nothing's going on. One thing, I look at the clock. It's 9 o'clock in the morning. The next thing I know, it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I have masterminded the takeover of something or someone, or have plotted the downfall of, you know, the last person who gave me the hairy eyeball. I mean, I will squander hours like nobody's business because I'm just up here. I am not here. I'm not in the day. I'm not in the moment. What this also does is set me up to be an overreactor. I've heard it so many times that I overreacted. This fourth step is my only hope of living without overreaction. Because when something occurs in the day, in the moment, I can respond directly to that instead of the 500 like things that occurred in the past that are still unresolved conflicts. So I'm not displacing. I'm not, you know, if you, one of my hot spots is the word disappointment. My mom really uses that like a master on me. I mean, it's, I don't know, it's like a sword. It just draws blood on me. Well, if I hadn't done resentment work on my mom, and I've actually done resentment work on the word disappointment, if you just happened to be walking by and said, that was disappointing, I might slap your face. Or I might, you know, develop Tourette syndrome and cuss you out, and you would have no idea. You know, that's how I'm a producer of confusion rather than harmony. Because you have no idea why I just unloaded on you. And the fact of the matter is, I didn't just unload on you because of you and what you did, but because I haven't cleaned up my own mess. One of my favorite speakers says that doing a four-step means that I'm looking at all my garbage, but it just doesn't stink anymore. I can see it all. I can look at it in black and white. In the spiritual realm, there's kind of a new language. It's not, is this right or is this wrong, is this good or is this evil? It's, is this working? Can I live at peace with this? Sometimes the best possible relations with all is I don't have a relationship with certain people. I mean, it doesn't mean that there's going to be Pollyanna pie in the sky. Balloons are released for everyone. That's not what's going on here. What's going on here is that I'm going to start living in reality instead of the created reality, which is just basically manufactured misery going on up in my head. I'm going to be present. I mean, that's kind of new agey and whatever, but that's really what it is.
Thanks. Dave, I'm an alcoholic. And this business of resentment is infinitely grave to me. Goes back to the bondage of self. It's really, I was so bound up emotionally when I got here through resentments and fear. And, you know, if you said something, I'd be about five questions up ahead of you trying to figure out the path and how I was going to go. That's the brainstorm to me. Plus, they got, you know, if my girlfriend asked me, how are you feeling, it would just be white noise in there. It would be a storm. And I was just so emotionally bound up, I couldn't answer questions like that. I didn't really know how I felt. It was just drunk or not drunk, you know. And so the tool that helped me the most, that I think comes after the readings tonight, but I'm going to pull it out because it's really what I got. It was the best thing I got out of 4 and 5, and that's looking at my part in it. You know, what were my motives, my expectations, You know, what did I go into this situation, whatever it was, looking for? Because on every one of them on my list, I went into it willingly. You know, I was looking for something out of it. And that goes back to, well, hey, if I just don't do that anymore, maybe things will go a little better. You know, it really was just such a learning and freeing and mind-opening experience to know that this wasn't everybody else's fault. It really is. It centers in my mind. It centers in the way I think. And while that's not going to change overnight, there is hope. It gave me great hope because I saw other people in here that were living differently and were doing things differently. And so while that didn't give me power necessarily, it is that ability to control the things I can, you know, that's in the serenity prayer. So that's it.
Right. We're going to go to, we're still on page 66. We turned back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We cannot wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry. Thy will be done." We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one.
This is my favorite section. Because it has this, the key to the future. And the key to the future is that I see that everybody else is just like me. That it is not your fault that I have fear and resentment. My spiritual sickness has generated those things. They have not come from you. And although it's obvious that there are three columns, because you look on page 65 and there's three columns, it doesn't talk about column four, but this is about column four. Some people call it column four. I call it the realization, where I take a look at the fact that I've done the exact same thing, that I have a resentment against this person for doing. And did I wake up that morning and think, I'm going to screw David Francis over today? No, I did not. I was not. You're just right there. You got a red shirt on. It's waving a flag. No, I was not waking up thinking, here's what I'm going to do. It happened because I have a spiritual malady. I wasn't planning on it. So that starts to release a little bit of the resentment, because I can allow my imagination no longer resists the fact that you weren't doing it on purpose. That in fact you had no purpose in doing it at all. That in fact you probably weren't doing anything at all. So some people call it column four. Some people call, I call it the realization. I have some friends in North Carolina. They call it the turnaround. And what the turnaround is that I see that what came up in those first three columns, you know, who you are, what you did, why it pissed me off. Now I get to take a look at what was my part in this. You know, I mean, I have these ongoing resentments against my mother. But isn't it true that I have been every bit as disrespectful to her as she has ever been to me? Isn't it true that I kind of grow, I foster this resentment by talking trash about her to anyone who tells me I repeat every bad thing she's ever done so I can have allies on my side in my mental warfare against my mom's attitudes towards me? Haven't I done exactly the same thing? And so this prayer comes in. Well, I don't know where it is. Oh, yeah, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? And again, this is an act against my will. I do not want to be helpful to the people that have been pissing me off, that have been taking pot shots at me, or in my perception, that have been taking pot shots at me, poaching on my boundaries, disrespecting me. All that stuff is what goes on in my own head. But again, I believe my own hype that, well, this is what I know. This is what that person did. My man is always calling me on the fact that no matter what kind of bullshittery I'm saying, that I say it with a very authoritative tone, like, I know it. I'm sure. Well, no, I don't know. I only think I know. And today the problem is not a drink, it's a think. And this is getting me to take a look at that. And only God will show me how. I cannot tell you that I woke up saintly. I'm not. David Francis said it last. It's you again. I don't know. I'm looking another way. But we are not saints. I am not beyond reproach at all. But I have made myself miserable enough and other people miserable enough that I am willing to pick up these tools that have been given to me. I do not think that I am going to become Teresa of Avila. But I do think that I can become the best Amy that God created me to be. And that I can take a kindly and tolerant view of everyone if I ask God to help me. I do not have any expectation that I'm going to get there on my own. I'm not going to. If I could have been a nice, gracious, kind, whatever person, I would have been. I couldn't do it on my own. This is how I get there.
Thanks, Amy. I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic. And, we're not brothers and sisters in our virtues, but in our defects. And when I read this about other people are sick too, it actually made me feel better. You know, I'm not the only one. You know, so there is this commonality among all people, I think. And there were a few things done to me when I was before I was 10 or 12. I thought you said to kiss it. Anyway, there were some things done to me before I was 10 or 12 that I haven't, as far as I remember, done to anybody. But anything after 10 or 12, especially certainly after 13 when I started drinking, nobody did anything to me that I haven't done to somebody else, you know. But my sponsor said, well, if they didn't have a name for it, you know, you'd be the only one that did it, but they have a name for it, so you're not the only one that did it. I like to think I was unique, but, you know, and I also, so I did all those things too. I put myself in positions to be hurt. But the main thing that I looked at is a lot of people showed me love and compassion when I was at my worst. I mean, I have a boss who's a saint, and he gave me a job when I was unemployable. He kept me on after I started stealing from him. But when the time came, he fired me. But then he offered to send me to treatment. And at that point, you know, it may have been different if I'd have had $100 in my pocket, but I knew the gig was up. I just felt the bottom drop out. I had no fight left. And I went. You know, he's a saint in my book. I don't know. I don't know if I have that kind of compassion and love in me, but I'm learning it from you guys. And this business of praying for others, it works. You know, I had started that early in my sobriety because I didn't really know what to pray for. I didn't have any real experience with that. And I'd lost 4 or 5 close friends and 10 acquaintances to this disease over the years. And so that's who I prayed to when I prayed. And it actually helped me. And then, you know, once I started to go through this resentment list and my sponsor suggested I pray for these people, you know, the old adage, prayer doesn't change God, it changes me. And I found that to be true. You know, the longer I do it, the less important it becomes. You know, how important is it really? And hopefully at some point, I'll make an amends and I can be helpful to that person. Thanks.
Can we thank Dave and Amy?
Thank you, Amy.
Thank you. I
enjoyed it. We're going to pass the basket now in accordance with the seventh tradition, which states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the Seventh Tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services district, area, and the GSO remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. This time, are there any AA-related announcements?
I'm Sally, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Sally. Sally.
Not until June. June 18th is Gratitude in Action, formerly known as Saturday on the James. It'll be held at Bayside Presbyterian Church, Yule Road in Virginia Beach. The intergroup committees will give their presentations at 10. We have entertainment. We're having a skit. At noontime, it's lunch, and at 1 o'clock, our delegate will give the report. June 18th. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sally.
Thanks, Sally.
Any other? Right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, could you raise your hands? At this time, we'd like to welcome any newcomers. That's anybody within the first 30 days of sobriety. If you could, would you please introduce yourself by your first name so we can welcome you?
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey,
Craig, welcome.
I'm Amy, I'm
an alcoholic. Hi,
Amy. All right. We do have literature available. It's on the table over here. We have the pamphlets are free and the books are for sale at cost. sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. If you have any questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, you can come see me after the meeting. I'll be up here. You can ask me any questions about that. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the front doors from the church. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, which is simpleactions.net. All right, and can we have another little round of applause for Amy and Dave? And Brian. Thanks to everyone. After we clean up, we're all invited to and encouraged to continue the conversation on the stuff discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol on 22nd and Colony. And could I have someone please read the last two paragraphs on page 164?
BJ.
BJ.
Hey, BJ.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
And for those one, we'll close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil.